Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burge and this is the show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. Now, I always say this, there's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish the book, I do review it and I put it up online for everyone to download, or for as many people who want to download it, to download it. And this time, of course, it's taken a long time again as I've been busy again. I've been working on other stuff again. And also the book has been really, really long. It was 860 pages, the book Perdido Street Station by China Mayville. Whatever it is. Anyway, this was suggested a while ago, actually, by one of the listener. I don't actually have the name in front of me here. Maybe I'll look that up later. And they said, yeah, you should check out China Mayville. It's worth checking out. And I thought, okay, fair enough. And I saw this book there. I was going to read another book, but then I just saw it there when I was at the bookshop. And I thought, oh, I'll pick it up. And I read it. It just took quite a long time. I actually finished it a few days ago. But 2 days ago, I flew to Argentina, and now I'm here in Buenos Aires. So I've been a little bit busy going out and doing shopping and sightseeing, all that kind of stuff. And also, because I finished it when I was at home and then flew, I didn't want to bring the book with me. So I don't actually have a copy of the book in front of me, which I normally do have when I do this podcast. But I did open up the page on Wikipedia, so I've got the a proper list of the cast there, and so have all the information that I need. Anyway, so this book was published, let me quickly look here, 2000. Actually says it's 710 pages here on Wikipedia, but the copy that I had was a paperback, and it was about 860 pages. So yeah, a pretty big book that we got there. Let me set up the world of the book here. So the world, like, everything takes place on a planet which I don't think is meant to be Earth, because it's like Earth with different laws of nature and laws of science and laws of physics, let me put it that way. There's a lot of stuff that goes on which wouldn't work on Earth. So I think it's set in some kind of alternative reality rather than in the future. Or in the past. No, it's certainly not set in the past. It's not set in the future of our current world. Everything takes place on one planet, and actually everything takes place on one, in one city on the planet. And the city is called New Crobuzon. New Crobuzon, I think that's how you pronounce it. Again, it's one of these lots of words in this book which I've never pronounced before, sort of made up words and things like that. So, yeah, I've never actually say them out loud. I only ever read them. So New Crobuzon is a very, very big, very, very dirty city. And when I say it's dirty, I'm talking really, really dirty. This is the whole point of the book. China Mayville has come up with this city, which is very well illustrated, very well written, and it is very, very dirty. That's sort of like the overriding aspect of everything that you ever read about it. Nothing's ever just a street. It's a crummy, cruddy kind of street with nasty, unclean, you know, coarse kind of stuff, and it's greasy and grimy and grubby, and everything, every time he's ever explaining anything, it's just always about how everything is like slimy and squalid and, you know, untidy and unwashed and lots of other kinds of words along those lines. And it gets to the point where, of course, you think, okay, you've got a thesaurus in front of you, open up the word unclean or dirty, and you're just sort of like listing all these different words. It does feel like that a bit. But otherwise, it is a very, very well-realized city. He obviously has made, yes, there's a map in the front of the book, and there's loads and loads of different districts, and because it's a long book, you visit lots and lots of different parts of this city. In a way, this is a good thing, because, you know, there's a lot going on there, and it's very well realised. In another way, it's a bad thing, which of course I'll get onto in a bit. As you know, I'll talk about that now, actually, because there's too much world-building. There's a lot of things that take place in the book, but the detail that he goes into about the city, which is, like, huge sections, actually pages after pages after pages go into sort of, like, what this street is like, what this river is like, what this tower is like, what this house is like, what this dome is like. Just goes on about them, how they're all sort of, like, you know, sooty and spattered in blood, and there's people left dying in the streets and here and there like that. And it just keeps going on and on about it, and, like, so you get to, like, okay, they're going to go to a different part of the city, and there's like 4 or 5 pages just describing that part of the city, and guess what? It's also dirty, and it's also muddy, and it's also, like, unkept and scuzzy, and other words that I can't come up with off the top of my head here. Really struggling now to keep up with these descriptions. Anyway, yeah, so he just goes on and on about it, and it gets in the way of the story a bit. So, on to some of the characters. First up, the main character, I guess, is a guy called Isaac. And if I just check here on Wikipedia, Isaac Dander Grimneblin. Again, sort of very sort of like high fantasy kind of name there. And he is a scientist, sort of like a freelance scientist, sort of a middle-aged type guy. I in a picture of my head, I'm thinking he's being played by, I don't know, I wouldn't say Bruce Willis, because Bruce Willis also does the action roles, but maybe that's what comes into my head here, because he does a bit of action later on in the book. Anyways, he's this middle-aged, sort of like unemployable freelance scientist, and he's got a girlfriend called Lynn, and she is not human. Because there's not just humans in New Crobuzon. There's these sort of, I think they call them, I don't know what they call them. Anyway, so they're sort of like, they don't call them aliens. There's different words for it. Because that's the thing, when China Melville can use a word to describe something, it's like they're aliens or they're non-humans. He doesn't use that kind of word. He'll use a completely different word, completely unnecessary word, but just to show that he's got them. And sorry that I don't have the book in front of me. I can't think of all these off the top of my head. So anyway, there's Lynn. And she is an artist, but she's not a human. She's got a human's body, but her head is made up of some kind of, like, a beetle kind of thing. Scarab, I think that's what this is the term that he uses there. And it's sort of like, it's a very strange kind of situation here where the females of this species, and the species is called I think it was a Kepri. The Kepri species. The males are just beetles, and the females, for some reason that's never actually explained, are beetle heads with, or the beetle sort of body, whole kind of bodies with a human body, human female body stuck to the bottom of it. So anyway, they're lovers, and at the beginning we get to know a bit about their relationship. She's also an artist as well. Then the next main character, I guess, is called Yag, or Yagarik. And he is this sort of like an angelic figure who has lost his wings. He's sort of like half bird, half man kind of thing called a Garuda. And and he's lost his wings. And so he goes up to Isaac and said, yes, I did something wrong in years ago. And my punishment was that I got my wings chopped off. And Isaac was like, what did you do wrong? And he's like, I'm not telling you. I just want my wings back. I just want to be able to fly again. And that's what starts up Isaac and Yagarik's part of the story, really. It's because Yag wants his wings back, and Isaac says, I think I can make you fly. So that's what starts off there. The final main character who we stick with throughout the book is Durkan, and her full name, checking here on Wikipedia again, Durkan Blueday, and it says here she's a middle-aged lesbian and seditionist, co-editor of the Runagate Rampant, an underground newspaper. So she's also an art critic, and she's got like this role in the story, which I'll get into later, I guess, maybe. But she's there all the way through, and there are other minor characters. You get to meet different people. I'm not going to go into all them all now. Like, you get to meet the mayor of the city, and mob bosses, and criminals here, and adventurers there, and lots of different alien species and kind of people. So there's a lot of characters in this book. Like I say, over 800 pages long. You expect to find a lot of characters. So, like I say, the plot. I just made a note here. I didn't read the back of the book before, like the back cover of the book before I started it, so I had no idea what the plot was going to be about. There's just a picture of a city, like a dirty city on the front, and of course in the first few pages you realise, okay, I sort of get the idea of this kind of steampunk industrial revolution kind of style of writing and technology and, you know, just sort of styling there. So I knew that was what was going to be there. So, like, again, it was just recommended by a listener, so I thought, hey, I'll just go with this. So the first half of the book starts really, really well. And this is the first half of the book is actually I really, really liked about it. Get on to the second half of the book in a bit. We get to see Isaac and Lynn in their relationship, and there's this mixed race going on there, alien and human, and they're keeping it a secret, although it's not really a secret, but, you know, there's lots of prejudice against kind of the aliens, you know, lots of race kind of themes going on there. Lots of really interesting stuff. Also, Lynn gets a job. She has to do a portrait. Well, not a portrait. She has to make a sculpture of someone And this someone is a crime boss. You find this out quite early on. So lots of stuff here to do with art and creativity and motives behind making art. And of course, you can discuss it with Durkin, who's an art critic, and she doesn't want to discuss it with Isaac because she doesn't want to say that she's working for the crime boss. And there's lots of really interesting stuff going on there as well. Also, Durkin, she's not just an art critic. Like I said before, she writes for an underground political newspaper. And so she gets lots of deeply involved in politics, and there's lots of interesting stuff going on there. You know, we're talking about workers' rights and democracy and, autocracy and, you know, protests and strikes and political action. And lots of stuff's going on there as well. Really interesting. And also there's Yag, of course, who asks Isaac, "I want your help, make me fly." And of course, we get to know Isaac better. We get to see him getting into his teeth into a problem. And we learn things about, you know, because he's a scientist, we learn things about the different rules of physics and the different rules in the universe through him. And it's really interesting there as well. And I was really getting into that. So one of the things that Isaac does is he wants to make wings, or he wants to make Yag fly again. So he gets in, he puts out the word, he puts out this message with a guy called Lemuel Pigeon, who's like a minor crime fixer kind of guy, criminal kind of fixer. And he says, "I want your help, find me things with wings. Anything with wings I'll pay for." And so that's what he does. And one of the things that he gets is this little caterpillar, which is going to turn into some kind of butterfly or moth. Not really quite sure what it is. And it's very strange because Isaac's going, "Oh, I wonder what this is." And he keeps it. And actually, it turns out that it turns into a monster, which starts sucking people's brains, etc. And then it gets out and it releases some other monsters which are being looked after by someone else in the city. I don't really want to give it all away here. But that's it. And then the rest of the book, at that point I was like, wait a second, I was actually thinking, this has all been really interesting up until this point. We knew the caterpillar was there, you know, about 300 pages into it, so not even halfway through. And it's all setting up lots of all these interesting threads and lots of interesting ideas, and you're getting to know this person, that person, and other things that I've not mentioned here at all. Loads of stuff going on in the city. And then this monster suddenly, comes out of its little pupa. It sort of spreads its wings and goes about its business. And I'm thinking, this is going to be it, isn't it? It's going to turn into a bug hunt. It's going to turn into a monster movie. Well, not a monster movie, a monster book. And they're going to have to sort of track down these moths which are terrorizing people. And that is what it turns into. And I'm not just saying that is what happens. I'm saying that completely takes over the entirety of the rest of the book. Isaac and Yag and Durkheim and Lemuel and Lynn, to a certain extent, they need to stop the monsters. But of course, the government's against them and they're being chased by the mob and lots of other stuff and loads of other factions going on. But everything that it comes down to then is them trying to stop these monsters. And I was really, really disappointed with that. And of course, looking at the back of the book, it goes, yes, this dark monster has been unleashed on the city and they've got to stop it. And I was like, yeah, but I didn't want it to be about that. There was all this really interesting stuff going on there about, you know, all the art and the politics and the city itself and how it's run and the, you know, economics behind it. Loads of really good stuff going on there. And then it turns into a bug hunt. Because that's the term used from Aliens, and of course you can see Aliens is in this book as well, down to sort of even to the shape of the aliens or some of the alien species in here as well, and everything else gets just chucked out, completely thrown out. There's sort of surface in there, but it gets to the end of the book and all of these other ideas that were there, all the political action was taking place, ignored it, doesn't matter. You know, all the stuff that we saw with the mayor and the politics, doesn't matter at all here. And the stuff with the art and even the really interesting stuff for the relationship between Isaac and Lynn, it just disappears from massive parts of the book. Sort of comes back a bit at some points, but yeah, it just disappears. Lynn, this really interesting character, just becomes the love interest. Well, not the love interest, just the damsel in distress. You know, she gets sort of taken, again, not really giving anything away here. You can sort of see it coming a mile off, but it's just so unsatisfying, the second part of the book, because everything is left out. And that's the real main point that I didn't like about this book, that so much was being set up and so many good ideas and not all good ideas, but so many ideas, and then it just all gets thrown out the window into this sort of this bug hunt and then a little bit of moralizing at the end, and that was it. So, yeah, not very good there. Anyway, getting on to other things. The characters. First of all, science and technology is all over the place in this book. But it's very strange because it's like it suddenly needs something for the book. And it's like, is telepathy, is that possible in this universe? And he's like, trying to, Melville just goes, yeah, I think it is. So he writes down this thing of how telepathy works with clockwork and different kinds of ether and this and that. And then he just goes, this kind of technology, is that needed? And he's like, yeah, that's needed. I need to write about that. And he says, do computers exist? And they haven't existed so far. Yeah, let's make computers exist. Okay, let's do that. And it's like, at this point in the book, we need a way of communicating long distance. We need to get energy from here to there. How will that happen? Oh yeah, okay, no, we can use this, we can use that. And it's like any idea that he has, he just goes, oh yeah, I'll put that in there. And it's really weird because it's very mixed and matched. It's like a mixed level of technology. For example, if you fire a gun, it goes bang, and then you've got to like empty it out and you've got to put new gunpowder in, and then you're going to put a shot down there. There's no repeating pistols or anything like that. It's all muskets and blunderbusses and stuff. And then the person next to them is fighting with some kind of flamethrower. It's just like, he's get this flamethrower out like that. And I'm like, wait a second, flamethrowers were invented, what, 50, 60 years ago? I don't know. They were around in the Second World War. And repeating guns were around about years and years before that. And at the same time, they've got steam engines, they've got trains going past, and mechanical computers, and airships, and elevators, but no planes, and they don't have, like, heavier-than-air air transport. They've only got lighter-than-air air transport. And it's all over the place. And I actually really like that kind of thing, but I thought it didn't actually need to be that much in there. And I was thinking, this is very much like a kind of fantasy setup to this book as well. And I was expecting it to be science fiction because, you know, I was told, hey, why don't you read China Mail for this good science fiction? And it won the Arthur C. Clarke Science Fiction Award and stuff like that. But it has this sort of like very kind of this kind of fantasy styling around. It's like, oh, if something needs to be happened, oh, they'll just invent a spell and it'll just happen, which is okay with fantasy. And it seemed actually, in the end, it seems to be okay in this book because it does create a whole world and you never know quite what sure is possible. And while I read, normally don't like this kind of stuff because China Melville has just been so free and so easy with it. And it's just like, this idea, oh yeah, let's put it in. It's like, I was reading it and I was thinking, wait a second, he's not going to come up with some kind of, oh, he's not just going to invent this technology and it's going to work, is it? And I'm like, oh, I'm not really sure. But then in my head, I just sort of flicked a switch. I thought, no, I'm just going to look at this in a different way. It's set in this very sort of like industrial revolution. It's sort of like London in the 1800s kind of situation with muddy this and pollution that and steam engines here and that kind of stuff there. And I thought, well, what I'm going to do, I'm just going to read this book. I'm not sure if this is what you're meant to do when you're reading steampunk kind of science fiction, because I think this is probably one of the first like real like large examples of steampunk that I read. I just thought, what I'm going to do, I'm going to imagine that I'm actually in London 200 years ago, and I'm going to read this book as though it was written by a Victorian or pre-scientific revolution, industrial revolution science fiction author. Of course, science fiction, as we know, it didn't really exist back then. But what if it did exist? So instead of them talking about computers like we would talk about computers in the 21st century, how about they talk about computers as they did in the 18th century? And so they use clockwork, of course, but they also use, like, in this book, it's actually used ether and phlogiston. So they're not talking about kind of like, this and that. You know, phlogiston was the original way that people thought heat and flame worked. You know, when you heat something up, you add more phlogiston, or you take phlogiston out. Actually, I can't even remember it, but you know, if you read back about the history of science, phlogiston and ether and all these other kind of things are mentioned and of course are disproved. But I'm thinking, no, wait a second, if that's where you're starting from and you're writing a book in the year 1800, a science fiction book, would you come up with something like this book? Would you come up with a book like Perdido Street Station? I thought, yeah, that is gonna be good. I think, you know, that's the way I looked at it. And of course, I did read it like that, and I actually managed to enjoy the book a lot more like that. But it did become a little bit hard to keep telling myself that. You know, it's sort of like, okay, they can do massive amounts of sort of like kind of, I think it's sort of like thaumaturgy or something like that. I thought that was a made-up word. It actually means, I looked it up in the dictionary I was reading. It was like thaumaturgy, and it means just magic or some kind of magic, but it's sort of like a scientific thaumaturgy. And I'm thinking, yeah, I'll fit this together, and they can use that to weld, and they can use that to, you know, they don't have to rivet stuff together. They can use some kind of magic styling or magic energy to weld stuff together, and also to weld people together, so they can make these people called remade, which is sort of like bits of different bodies and different aliens and different animals, and you stick them together as a, some kind of punishment for people. You read about that quite a lot in this book. I'll let you read about that, though. I'm not going to explain it all now. But yeah, it became a bit sort of a bit tricky to keep telling myself that, especially I think it came down to when the author came up with an idea which wasn't based on something in the past or isn't immediately relevant or easy to explain. Actually, let me explain it this way. For example, he talks about, you know, ether and phlogiston, and, you know, he talks about mechanical minds and also a bit extra-dimensional travel and telepathy, all these other things I've talked about. He just said, yeah, and they did that, and explains how they did it, and it's like, yeah, okay. But other things, which are sort of his ideas, which are China Melville's ideas, it's like he explains them in depth, like the crisis energy kind of thing. It's like he goes all the way into the equations that are being used and step-by-step and what this meant and that, what meant that meant, and this meant and that meant, and it goes into pages of this, and also rigging wire through a street. You need to put a wire from here 2 miles across the city to there, and it's like, great, so let's just put the wire across. But no, he goes into excruciating detail, loop by loop. Literally, he pulled it this meter and he stuck it there on the wall, and he took it there and he put it there, and they did this, and they then routed it through here, and then he put it there. I'm thinking, what are you talking about? I didn't mind it when he just said, oh yeah, and they use scientific thaumaturgy to weld these two things together, and it's just a statement. I'm like, yeah, I'll go with that. But then it's sort of like, oh, and this thing that they're going to do it here and here and here, and it's sort of like this mismatched, you know, structure, or the different ways that the different technologies and the different science and the different laws of physics were being explained to me, I found really jarring, because they just went, you know, some things were just passed off as like, yes, this exists in the world. Aliens exist. Never explained. Aliens exist. Or non-human species exist. And I'm just like, yeah, fine, I'll go with that. And then other things that sort of like, no, let me explain this one in detail, because it seemed to be something a little bit unique. Although, to be honest, that the crisis energy thing, I just thought, oh, for goodness sake. It's like, if you're just going to break the second law of thermodynamics, don't explain to me how you're going to do it in a way that I can just pick holes in and dislike, and just doesn't make any sense, and is actually just boring to read, you know. Just say, okay, now I'm going to break the second law of thermodynamics, just going to get free energy from nowhere. Just say that you're going to do that, and, well, don't do that, because it seems a bit of a cop-out at that point. I was expecting a little bit more from crisis energy that is actually done with it. It just becomes into sort of like, he plugged in a powerful battery. That's all they could have said. Just plugged in a powerful battery, and they could have moved on. So many of these things are needed to move the story on, but so many things he could have just replaced them with something else, or replace it with something easier, or just taken out completely, and the story would have worked just as well. And yeah, I don't really like that about story, you know, science fiction. If you're going to have an idea and you can just take the idea out, and if you did take it out, the story would work just as well without it. It's like, think hard before leaving that idea in. And that's another reason why this book runs to 800 plus pages, is because every idea he comes up with is just left in. Okay. Other monsters, there are other monsters, I just mentioned this before, aliens, although a lot of these not needed in the book at all. The handlingers, I can't remember exactly what it is, just this sort of like very alien-esque, sort of like the facehugger in Aliens, and it goes around the throat and it controls humans, and it's just a whole thing there, whole section of the book is just like, not needed. It could have just been left out. Cactus people. And it's like, people who are like half cactus, sentient people, like people who have evolved out of cactuses. It's like, yeah, all right, a bit silly, like not very believable. And the whole, you know, they could have just done exactly the whole thing just without that character or without that style of alien. Unlike some of the other aliens, which need to be that kind of alien. Here it's just like, oh, I've got this idea for an alien and I'm going to do it and it's going to happen there. I'm just like, was it really needed? Did you have to go to like an extra 30 pages to tell me all about the place where they lived and the whole societal setup of the cactus people? Couldn't you just said, and the cactus people did this, and we just sort of skip through it a bit quicker? Also, there's demons in it. They actually communicate with hell, which is actually quite a fun part of the story. It didn't need to be in there at all. They just go, hey, I'm going to call up hell. Hell, can you help me? And the devil goes, no, I'm not going to help you. And they're like, oh, okay. And she's like, so wait a second, you just wrote in this whole two chapters or this whole chapter there and just asked someone for help and they didn't help? I mean, you know, I could see sort of some function there, but it really, you know, just time and time again, it could have been taken out. It's just like, yeah, I enjoyed it, but really, make the book move a bit quicker, please. And also there's the Weaver, which is just the deus ex machina. And literally, you know, he's like this godlike figure. And when our main characters are, and they're sort of stuck on a roof or they're stuck here and they're being pinned down by the enemy, this guy just turns up and just picks them up and takes them away. Which is, I think, the textbook definition of the deus ex machina was when our Greek hero was in a sticky situation and they couldn't get out, and one of the gods comes down and just picks him up, lifts him out, and drops him somewhere else and say, oh, you're safe now, and then goes away again. And then our main hero gets on with his story or with his quest. I think that's actually what deus ex machina means, and that's actually what you get here in the book. Literally, which is very disappointing. Again, only at the end of the book where, you know, they're sort of trying to wrap the story up and trying to get on with the story, and China Melville just has written us into another dead end and doesn't know how to get out. A lot of the writing style is interesting. I did like it a lot. There's a lot of style in the book, a very stylishly written book, but a bit too much description. Like I was saying before, there's too many words. He has a thesaurus, or a dictionary, or a book of words, or a list of synonyms. You know, again, I'm just going over this kind of thing. You know, he's got one open in front of him. And like I said, I made a note here, words that I thought were just made up were actually just really obscure words used for the sake of their obscurity. Another thing about the writing style that I didn't quite like was the pacing. And I said he was describing the city quite a lot. This happened so often that the story would be picking up, and I'm like, yes, great, we're coming into it, and then it'll stop. Four pages explaining the street, and it's like, okay, we've gone to a different part of the city, that this is going to happen here. Why is it going to happen here? No real reason why they've got to go all the way out here. But guess what? I'm now going to explain how this sort of squalid kind of I can't think of all the more words to use. A sordid part of the city, this filthy, dirty part of the city. I'm going to explain it to you for 4 or 5 pages, and then we're going to get on with the action. I'm just like, just get on with the action. We're 20 pages away from the end of the book here. Don't now start describing the setting of the book. You should have got all that out the way at the beginning of the book. And I thought he did get it all out the way at the beginning of the book, because it was taking so long to get into it, and I was enjoying the slow start of the book. Anyway. So the pacing was just bit attention. No. Let me explain this street. And the characters, I liked the characters again in the first half up to the first three quarters of the book. Characters are being pretty good. Isaac, interesting, well-rounded kind of character. Except he suddenly turns into like Superman. Well, not Superman. Like I said before, Bruce Willis. It's because Bruce Willis is this kind of, you know, he made his name as an action hero, Die Hard. He's like Homer Simpson, fat guy, bald head, not got any shoes on, and he gets put into this situation, and over the course of that, he becomes some kind of Superman. And this is, not Superman, but, you know, an Ubermensch, you know, sort of like the guy who is the real hero here that you can believe in, and is jumping across the gaps in the building and throwing grenades and stuff. And he was a cop, so you could sort of see that. Here, we've got this bumbling scientist, and he turns into that. It's like he keeps going on, and like the militia and all these other people are going up against these monsters and just being taken out left, right, center. They just don't stand a chance. And Isaac, he keeps going and he keeps going, and it's like he hasn't rested for 3 days. He'd pass out by now. It does say sometimes that he sort of sweats and he's out of breath, but he just keeps on going. He never seems to need any rest. And everyone else in the book, I mean, he's the main character, so he's got to keep and stay involved. Although at one point, you know, parts of the book, he's not really the main character anymore, and other people sort of take over in a way, but then he sort of takes over again at the end. But I'm just saying that, you know, that kind of thing didn't really work. And also Yag goes through the same kind of thing. He's like this very standoffish kind of, he wants to be disconnected, things happen around him, he doesn't make things set in motion, and then suddenly he becomes an action hero as well, which in that way I can actually see it from him, because he was a hunter in a previous life. Just since his wings have got cut off, he decides that he wants to step back and he does less in the world, and he doesn't want to take part in the world. Very passive character. And then he starts getting more involved, and I liked that about him. But like, it suddenly needed that every one of the main characters suddenly needed to become action superheroes, because it was down to, like, the four or five characters to save the world, or to save the city, because the militia and the mob and stuff, they're not doing, they can't get on with it. So, like, the entire resources of the entire government can't work stuff out, whereas four characters, sort of like a politician, no, not a politician, a newspaper writer, a scientist, a birdman without wings, and who's the other character? Oh, yeah, like a minor criminal fixer, little criminal guy. They suddenly sort of like almost single-handedly, there are other characters that come in, and other suddenly miraculous technologies which are invented to get the situation sorted out. Maybe not just invented, introduced as well. That's all right. I mean, I'll go with it, but so these people, I don't see them as action heroes, and they all become action heroes. And Durkham, the newspaper writer, she is a main character, and she's really well developed, but then she seems to hide in plain sight, and this is a real weird thing, that she's there, and another character comes in, that's Lemuel Pigeon, he comes in and becomes more of a main character. But Durkham is always there, and she's always doing stuff with people, but you never see stuff from her point of view for such a long time. She sort of drops out of the story. She's always with the other people. And it's sort of like, they went here and they went here and they went here and then they did this. And then Durkham did this. And I was like, oh yeah, I forgot Durkham was with these people a lot of the time. So it was a really weird thing how like a strong character drops out of sight and is just tagging along with the others for such a long time at the second half of the book. It's like they introduced her and then, you know, China Millfield suddenly didn't have anything to do with her, but sort of kept her throughout the end of the book. And like I say, she becomes one of the main characters. So yeah, the characters, while I liked them and they were well-rounded and they were quite interesting and they had interesting stories, they, you know, just the way that they were dealt with, it's sort of like everything was put aside for the bug hunt. You know, the bug hunt over, you know, just came over everything. And that's the thing as well, I guess the main theme of the book, which I'll just finish off with talking about some of the themes here, is that bugs are bad. Moths, slake moths, are dangerous, and they exist in more than one dimension. I know it's weird to say that, but it's like that is the thing that takes over the whole book. All these other themes, the politics and the art and the relationships and all these other things, are just dropped and it becomes a bug hunt. And there are some kind of themes that come out of the bug hunt, for example, like guilt and means justifying ends, and you know, and the city's dirty. Oh no, he's mentioned that a few times. You know, all these, there are a few, you know, of these other themes that are mentioned there, but it, you know, it's all undermined because the situation that they're trying to sort out, you know, this bug hunt is put in place, and they've got to, you know, question themselves about how they're going to respond to this bug hunt and what they're going to do and how far they're going to push themselves, and are they going to become the bad guys to kill bad, even worse guys, and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, yeah, but it was their own fault. It was Isaac's own stupidity and his lack of ethics and his immorality which got them into the situation in the first place. And then the end isn't very clear-cut, which I actually quite like ends of books which aren't completely clear-cut. But, you know, after 850 pages, I wanted a little bit more out of it than I got. I wanted some of the other ends, you know, these other themes and these other parts of the story and these other characters. I want them to actually be finished. I want something to happen to them. But we just forget all of that and just go down as this very narrow set of figures, like this very narrow set of characters. It's like we start off with a whole city, and by the end of it, we're down to like three people, four people, and then we're down to one person. And then at the end of that one person, it is literally in the last like three lines of the book, the last character that we're with makes a decision, and I'm like, I don't believe it. It's like wrong choice. That's not what that character would do. This other character, yeah, I understand this other thing, and this whole conflict that, you know, Isaac has at the end, where he's talking about a crime and he condemns someone for a crime which he's almost just done that crime himself, but then he condemns someone else for the exact same crime. And it's a very strange thing, and it's a very interesting kind of end, but it just sort of falls flat. It's like, okay, if you'd have wrapped this up in this way 300 pages ago, I'd have gone with it. And if you hadn't have introduced so many themes and characters at the beginning, I'd have gone with it. But, you know, you just went too far. And that's the thing that it comes down to in this book, is that it's got style and it's got character and it's got life and it's got so much stuff, but it just goes on too long. And the descriptions go on too long. And there's loads of things, loads of ideas and technologies and things that are introduced which didn't need to be there. So in this book is like 400 pages of really, really good stuff that I really liked. I really liked the first half, and I really like things throughout, and there's bits at the end which I really liked. But there's another 400 pages in there which could have just been cut. If he'd got a good editor, the editor would have gone, okay, make it at least 200 pages shorter. And wrap up maybe one more line at the end, maybe one more theme, one more storyline, one more character at the end, and do it in 200 pages less. And this book would have been, you know, I'd have said, you know, and sort out the pacing as well. Less description by the end. As much description as you want at the beginning, less description by the end. And it would have just been fantastic. But otherwise, I was really struggling. The first half, I was flying through this. The second half, it just took me a long time. And you can tell, to be honest, here's a little clue. You can tell how well I'm liking the book that I'm reading, because if I put out a podcast really quickly, it means I probably liked it a lot, or it was a short book. But if it takes me a long time to get to a point where I actually want to just finish off the book in two sittings, so I have to often do that. I read, you know, the first 200-300 pages of the book over 4 or 5 days, and then I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to finish the book tonight, and I just put in 4 hours and finish the book. Whereas this book, I couldn't do it. I was like, okay, now I'm going to put it in, and I started reading, and I'd fall asleep. Or I'd start reading, and then I just had other things to do, and I couldn't dedicate the time that I wanted to the end of the book. That's why I'm only going to give this book 2 stars. No, 2.5 stars. I'll give it 2, because it's an average book for me. Final thing that I put here, cyberpunk and steampunk. Again, I'm not reading a lot of cyberpunk and steampunk that I'm enjoying. Maybe I'm just not enjoying the punkiness or punkness or whatever it is here as well. Although I do like the style, you know, the style of the style of Neuromancer I really liked, but again, it's sort of like the delivery. So maybe the punkness and the cyberpunkness and the steampunk I do like, as long as there's something else to it, or a bit more to it, or it's just a bit cleaner cut. But then maybe that's the style of cyberpunk and steampunk. Maybe the punkness to it is like, oh, I'm just going to end this book how I want it. You know, you've invested, you know, 800 pages in this book, and the last 50, I'm not going to deliver it, I can be a punk. You know, I can do what I want. So maybe it's that kind of outlook of, it's not just the world of the book or the technology of the book or the setting of the book, it's actually the writing of the book itself. Although, like I said before, Altered Carbon by Richard Morgan, again. Yeah, I think that's I consider that cyberpunk, and I really enjoyed that book. So maybe it's not cyberpunk. Maybe it's just overrated books when they come out, and then I read these books a little bit later, like a few years or 15 years after they're published, and I just don't get enough out of them. So anyway, 2.5 stars. You can tell I haven't written many notes for this review because I'm rambling quite a bit here as well. So anyway, next book that I'm going to read, which I've actually almost finished, Robert Reed, The Well of Stars. It's the follow-up to Marrow, and the other book by Robert Reed, Down the Bright Way, I thought was the follow-up to Marrow, but I didn't read the back, so I read that by accident. So The Well of Stars, I actually read it on the plane over, or most of it on the plane over. I've got maybe like 50, 60 pages left to go of that, so I'll probably finish that book this evening, review it maybe tomorrow, upload it in 2 or 3 days' time when I get to Montevideo in Uruguay. I know there's a handy internet cafe there where the ship stops. Yes, I work on cruise ships, by the way. That's what I'm doing down here in South America for Christmas. And then after that, I'll read Nightfall by Isaac Asimov and Robert Silverberg, which I've read before. The reason I picked that book is actually quite long, and this podcast is going on, so I'll tell the story why I picked that book to read when I get to it. So, final note that I made here is maybe I'll do an end of the year special, because I've been doing this podcast for almost exactly a year now. I started it last January, started recording them last January, these reviews, and it's coming up to January again. So maybe I'll flick back through, say the books that I enjoyed most about the year, the disappointments, the books I liked least, that kind of thing. So if you want to express your opinion and about any of the reviews that you've listened to this year, now's the time. Email me, luke@juggler.net, and I'll reply to that during that end of the year wrap-up kind of thing. And that's about it. Oh yeah, keep also adding your comments to the sfbrp.com wiki page as well. Thank you to whoever it was who left that message on there about Black Man. And that's it. So stay in touch and catch you next time.